on Cambridge 105 Radio. With the Cambridgeshire Football Association, promoting football at all levels across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Hello and welcome along to a 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. We're providing you with the latest update on the coronavirus and its local impacts in sport. This week we get the latest from Cambridge United after they announced earlier this week that they have furloughed their playing staff, along with Paul Barry releasing a letter to supporters. We hear from Chief Executive Ian Maver, and Tim Armitage is on the show to discuss the news. The Cambridgeshire County Leagues announced last Friday they will be resolving the 2019-20 season via a points per game method. Chris Abbott from the Cams FA joins me to explain why. We also continue to find some of the best stories from the local community with links to sport. And this week we have another great story for you. If you want to keep fit and raise money for the outstanding NHS staff, well, you can do so via doing the Run 5K for the NHS campaign set up by Jamie Campbell. Well, Jamie spoke to me earlier on in the week about how the idea came about, and he also shared some amazing stories as he received from people completing the run in memory of loved ones, or just doing it because they love the run. And also, what must it be like for a GB athlete to take part in the Olympics in Tokyo this summer, only to find out, of course, it's being suspended? Well, former local hockey star and GB athlete Tessa Howard talks about just that and gives her story on how she fell in love with the sport. More on that later on in the show. If you want to get in touch, you can do, of course, once again, not in the studio this week, but you can get in touch on social media at 105 Sport on Twitter, 105 Sport on Facebook too. Thanks very much for tuning in. My name is Ollie Sutton. Let's get started with the news then, first of all. And it's been a pretty busy week with regards to news and press releases from the club at a time where we don't get too many at the moment. But they have announced earlier this week on Monday that they've furloughed their playing staff, along with Paul Barry then releasing a letter to supporters on Tuesday. Firstly, before we hear from Tim Armitage about all of that, let's hear from Chief Executive Ian Maver. He was talking on BBC Radio Cambridgeshire earlier this week.
Finances are tight. We're working on it every day. We're forecasting, working on various scenarios. But I believe we can get our way through to the summer, and then hopefully we'll be playing games again. We can generate some revenue. Maybe, I'm sure we will be, to start off with playing behind closed doors. And we're looking at how we can generate revenue, for example, by streaming the games, possibly improving the system for streaming that there is at the moment. So we're looking at every angle to get us through this.
Now, do you want the season to be finished or not?
That's a really good question. I think there's a big push to get the season finished for financial reasons, about media rights, etc. But, you know, when you cut this down, it really is a question of COVID-19 dictating whether we finish it or not. And if it's not safe to do so, then we shouldn't. Personally, I'm beginning to think it's unlikely that we will finish this season, but that's a personal view.
So season 19-20 will be what? Scrapped? Will it be just be halted where it finished? Will there be a... they work things out on an average points per game? How do you think they might conclude it then?
Yeah, those are all possibles, aren't they? I think, and there are drivers. If you're at the bottom of the league, you're probably happy to see the season scrapped. If you're at the top, you're probably thinking, well, I might have had a chance of promotion. But the reality is there's got to be some way of organising this. And I've spoken, for example, to a chief executive at a club that's at the top. He said that they'd be prepared for the season to be scrapped, even if it takes away a chance of promotion.
Now, there's a big meeting of League 2 clubs tomorrow, is that right?
Yeah, there's a weekly call with the League 2 club chief execs.
Will you discuss at that meeting scrapping the season, do you think, Ian?
I think it's a topic that will be brought up, but I'd be very surprised if any decision was made there. And in the end, it is the board of the English Football League, EFL, who make the decisions. So these are consultative meetings with each club.
But as it stands at the moment, which way would Cambridge United vote, do you think, to scrap or continue?
I think on balance and being realistic, we would scrap the season. But that's not to say that's a view that everyone shares. Mm. And if we have to play the season, we'll play it. Yeah, all contracts are timed 30th of June.
Right.
So not all players are out of contract, but a significant number across EFL will be.
Out of, what's your squad, 30 players?
28.
28. So how many of them will be out of contract on June the 30th?
We've got 12 out of contract on June the 30th.
So does it suit you to stop there? Or, I mean, if you went on, presumably, if the league went on, then you might have to pay more money to keep more of them on. Is that right?
Well, there's discussion on each of players' contract. There's a month of compensatory payment for July. And there's discussion about whether they should play, players should play during July to get the season finished.
Right.
The reality is there's going to have to be some negotiation with players to finish this, if we finish the season.
Because in effect they've been paid to do not a lot recently, is that what you're saying?
Well, just that in the end, it's in the players' interest for clubs to survive and get through this. Players need teams to play for and teams to play against. So we're going to need them to work with us, and I think they will.
And the furloughing that you're doing with the players, are you topping up the furloughed amount to, so they get 100% of their wages?
We are with the players because they're on a different contract to the other staff. So certainly at the moment we're topping up. You'll be aware, as many of your listeners will be, discussions with the PFA, the Professional Football Association, about deferment of some pay for players. That's a conversation we'll have. But at the moment we're topping them up to 100%. The rest of the staff who are furloughed are paid 80%, and the seven staff who are remaining have also, they've taken a pay cut to 80%.
So that clip was on BBC Radio Cambridgeshire earlier in the week. Thanks very much to them for providing that for us. So let's hear from Tim Armitage now then. And Tim, thanks for coming on the show. Firstly, what was your thoughts when you heard the news that the Ewes had furloughed their playing staff?
I'm kind of surprised by nothing. I mean, you know, so many things have changed over the last few weeks that the only thing I find a bit odd about it is that if they decided back then, why are they announcing it now when they furloughed the non-playing staff? Why didn't they just say they were furloughing everybody? Not that there's anything sinister to that, but it just seems a bit weird as to why they've suddenly decided they would do that. I guess it's probably economics. They probably realised how much it's going to cost them to pay the full salaries of the players. So I guess they've looked for the government help to pay at least part of that. If you look at the, I think it's $2,500 the limit per month. I assume that with 28 players, that's 28 times $2,500 that you're not having to pay from their salary. So although they're still paying a fair bit of it, they won't be paying that, you know, that money. So they need a break. So that's what they've done. The shame is, of course, the non-playing staff, you know, who those who are staying have taken a pay cut of 20%, and those that have been furloughed have also obviously taken a pay cut of 20%. The players get their larger sum of money and don't have to take a deduction from it. But that's the way it is, you know. That's the way it all works out for them.
The difficulty is going to be in, say, a couple of months or the next couple of months whilst negotiations continue, because as we know, players' contracts, and there's 12 of them out of the 28 in the U squad that run out in June. That's going to be a tricky decision to make, a tricky time.
Yeah, it is, because of course that all hinges on what happens to the rest of the season, because Ian talked about the option to pay them a compensatory month's payment for July, but you know that's only going to happen if the season is going to carry on. It does leave them in a difficult position, not only for the 12 who've come to the end of their contracts, because if they've been furloughed, presumably at that point their money stops completely, so they'll want to go somewhere else. Other players might have had ideas of going somewhere else, and if the season carries on, then at what point do they say, well, I don't want to play for Cambridge anymore because I'm going to go somewhere else, so I'm not going to play for that extra month? So there's all sorts of problems that there's no answer to. I don't get how they're actually going to do it in the end.
And morally though, should the players I mean, they're well entitled to say, no, we shouldn't. But should the players say that there's a number of fixtures in June, July time, should the players, I don't know, can they stay on without a contract and continue playing for the club, you know, without being paid to do the morally right thing to do and finish the season, finish the however many games there are?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't think it's morally right or morally wrong. I mean, I think the difficulty is it's such an unusual situation to be in that you could end up, you know, having to play an elongated season to get everything in. But even if they extend by a month and a half, they've still got a number of games they've got to play. So it's still going to be a rush. Players won't be up to fitness levels that they were before the break. So the question is, do you have a mini pre-season which makes the rest even more rushed? If you don't, then players are risking getting injured at a time when they might be looking to move on. So it's such a hard thing to kind of do. And, you know, before anyone can contemplate anything, that the FA needs to decide what happens to the end of the season. But we talked about this in the past. I mean, you know, you're going to have, say, four clubs or five clubs potentially that are going to have a real problem with the season just ending as it is and saying that's it, it's null and void, because they could have gone up. I see lawsuits flying left, right and centre. I mean, take Liverpool, you know, if the Premier League cancels the season and says it never happened, anyone think Liverpool are going to be happy with that? Yeah. You know, it's just impossible to figure out, you know, what's going to happen. The FA needs to come out and make their mind up and do it quickly so that, you know, everybody can get settled into what's going to happen and how they're going to prepare for whatever it is.
Well, Ian Mather mentioned there that he thinks it's unlikely the season will be finished. Do you go along with him in that? What do you think is getting more likely to happen? What would you rather happen?
I think that practically the season is over. I think legally the season will drag on potentially for a long time. And I think what could be happening is we could have a situation where there are still legal arguments being fought over this season by the time you start next season. I think we're so far into the season, I think you have to have a winner. But the problem is are you going to have, you know, winners and losers? Are all the leagues going to relegate people based on points per game to that point when they could have saved their season? I mean, how many times have you seen a club win 8 out of their last 9 games to avoid relegation? And that's the problem, is that clubs are going to say, no, we don't want points per game because we know we're not doing very well now. But, you know, we think we can do an awful lot better in the remainder of the season, those that were on a good run of form.
Lastly then, Cambridge United owner Paul Barry issued a statement on Monday saying that supporters that he's completely committed to the club despite his business suffering a significant financial hit. He also said that he's going to continue to help the club financially and invest in the club over the coming months. However, it will be, of course, with less income than he first expected at the beginning of the year. And he did also mention later on in the statement that he has asked for a fundamental reform of English football's lower leagues. What do you take from the statement, Tim?
You take it at face value that he's still committed to the club. He seems to be someone who wants to be part of the club rather than wants to own a football club. So I've no doubt that that's true. I guess his decision to keep funding and everything else will depend on how long this goes on for. Mm. You know, he's not got a bottomless pit of money, and his business, as he said, will be suffering as well. So there comes a point where financially he won't be able to do anything about it. Hopefully this will all be resolved long before we get to that stage. It's difficult. I'm intrigued as to what he means by a fundamental reform, as to how that will keep clubs, what reforms you could make that keeps things financially stable, apart from, you know, starting to consider, you know, wage caps and things like that. The thing that annoys me is that, you know, you look at the fair play and the other regulations around how much clubs can effectively get themselves into debt by spending beyond their means. And then you look at Salford, who've spent an awful lot of money buying players for the end of the season. And you wonder how that's allowed, given that even on a good day, their crowd isn't that big because their stadium isn't that big. But I think it's needed. I think the way in which football happens at the moment, you know, places undue strain on, you know, the lower league and non-league clubs. The obvious answer is to get the Premier League to cough up a lot of money, but they're not going to do that. And, you know, we don't get any much of the television rights, don't filter down that much and things like that. That's the real change that needs to be made, is to spread the money out a bit more evenly.
Tim, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So up next on this 105 Sports Special, we hear from Cambridgeshire FA's Chris Abbott as the Cambridgeshire County League announced last Friday that they will be resolving the 2019-20 season via a points per game method. Now, of course, the FA, the national governing body, announced a few weeks ago that from step 3 to 7 of the National League will be null and void and all results expunged. Now, step 7 includes the Kershaw Premier, which of course is in the Cambridgeshire County Leagues. So this announcement on Friday was from the leagues below the Kershaw Premier, all the way from Senior A to 4C.
The Kershaw Premier Division, being a step 7 league, had to fall in line and take obviously the FA's decision to null and void, so that will obviously remain. However, the FA gave leagues below that step 7 to make a decision on whether they complete the season null or void or on a points per game decision. We as a league felt that the best option was to consult the clubs, because at the end of the day it is the clubs' leagues. So we went out via electronic vote to clubs, and over 50% of the clubs voted and felt that the league should be decided, a promotion and relegation should be decided on a points per game ratio. So really, we've listened to our clubs, we've took on board what they've said, and that was a final decision. So we decided to go on a points per game ratio, really, on listening to our clubs.
And just to dot the I's and cross the T's, with regards to cup competitions, what's the situation there?
At this present time, no cup competitions that were not completed this season will be completed. So anything that's not already completed, so from our point of view, the four league cups that were completed will stand, but the remaining cups will remain null and void.
And because the national governing body, the FA, went with the decision from step 3 to 7 to null and void this season, were you inclined anyway just to, you know, it'd been probably quite simple, just to follow the lead of the FA, null and void the season for, like you said, the sides below, the leagues below step 7, and not give the clubs a say? But you said you felt inclined to pretty much do that and give the clubs a voice.
Yeah, I'm a massive believer in it. We've got a lot of hard-working volunteers out there that work hard in clubs, and at the end of the day, the league is for the clubs. That is their league, and therefore we felt it was only right that we got their views and their decision, effectively, their endorsement to do what we finally decided to do. So once the endorsement came back and over 50% were in favour of a points per game scenario, then we felt that we had to support our clubs in what they wanted, because it is their league. So that was the reason that the decision was taken last week, that to make it on a points per game, and relegation and promotion will be decided in that way.
And of course, we don't know when next season, the 2020-2021 season, will be yet. But what's the process now that decision has been made? Now the season has been resolved with a points per game basis. What's the process for you guys at the CAMS FA to ratify that, get this season finished and move on to the next?
I think as far as the Cambridgeshire County League goes and our County Cups are concerned, that finishes the season. The season's obviously, that finishes the 2019-20 season. I think now, if I'm honest, I think now we take a bit of stock, we take a bit of time. We are still speaking to clubs regularly and offering club support in what they need, but I don't think at this moment in time we can rush any decision on when next season's going to start or really what next season looks like, because we don't know. And I think it's really important that we don't rush that decision and just take our time. All being well, the Kershaw leagues normally start in August, the leagues like the Mead leagues start in September. All being well, we'll be in a position to start then. But at the moment, we honestly don't know. We have to listen to government advice. It's important we listen to government advice, obviously. So I think it's just a case of, let's just take stock a little bit. Let's just sit back for a little bit and just see what further advice we get from government before we plan too much for next year.
And is that the case when you're thinking about the promotion and relegation spots for the leagues next season? Because I imagine you'll have potentially, in a normal season, you'd have maybe a couple of teams drop out, maybe a couple of new teams, and you'd have to rejig the leagues. Is that process still going to take place? Of course, now the points per game situation has been resolved.
Yes, it will. Relegation will still take place. As far as the Kershaw Premier, we were too short anyway, so there'll be some motion to that. We have had, which is great news, we have had some applications to or potential applications to join the league. So that will have to be looked at. And we will start to do that work. Don't get me wrong. We're not going to sit here and twiddle our thumbs for the next 6 months, 6 weeks, or to say, not do nothing. We will start to do that work. What we won't do is say, this is where the season is going to start, this is where the season is going to finish, because we just don't know. But we'll obviously be working on making sure that we can give the best football and the best service to our clubs as soon as we are up and running again. I think we have to take stock that effectively, in a normal season, we still have best part of 3 to 4 weeks of a season left at this stage. So we are ahead of where we'd normally be in that respect. So I think it's a case of just sit tight for a little while, take stock, do the work behind the scenes, and obviously be in a position to offer the best service for the club as and when that arrives.
I'm sure, as you know, Chris, from the FA statement originally, there was a fair lot of backlash. Of course, there was naturally going to be when you make a decision and it affects so many people nationwide. There's always going to be people who disagree and agree. Mainly the backlash seemed to be the timing of the FA's decision to null and void from National League sets 3 to 7. Just tell us a bit why you decided to make the call now.
The FA's decision was to null and void sets 3 to 7, but they also decided that the grassroots season was finished. So there was never going to be an option for us to continue the season. That was never an option for us. Why we decided to make the call now, we've done this in a two-phased attack, really. We went out with clubs to consultations to start with. And we had a very sort of, we got views from both sides. So we then went out with a formal vote to the league secretary, to the clubs, with that decision. Realistically, we're still in lockdown until the 8th of May. That's the first, and the government are quite clear, government advice is quite clear, there's going to be a staggered approach to return to normality. So if the 8th of May is the first view of the current lockdown situation, realistically, we're not going to be in a situation where we're going to be allowed to play football on the 8th of May. So realistically, chances of getting the season finished at the moment were none anyway. So the best option, we just felt, the timing now was to let's part this season. Unfortunately, there's a lot more important things in the world and life at the moment than playing football. And let's get everyone back on an even footing come September, October, whenever that happens to be, to enjoying their football again. And I think it was right that we've done that now. It stops the people, it stops not the rumours, but it stops people talking about what's going to happen. Everybody's clear what's going to happen as far as the Cambridge UKLE is concerned now, and we can move forward to a brighter future.
Hopefully so, but as I'm sure you know, Chris, it doesn't stop the debate and analysis of decisions. What has the reaction been like on maybe social media or just to you personally about the decision?
I think overall, I think the feedback's been quite positive from our point of view, and we thank our clubs for that. I think it was really important that when you're making decisions that are this important, that you consult the participant, the people involved. And we've done that. We've given everyone a view. And to be fair, I respect both sides of the decision. The people that feel it should be null and void, the people who feel it points the game. I think I respect both cases of the argument. I think in such a big decision like this, I don't think you're going to please everybody. You're not going to please everybody. And I think it was always going to be a tough decision. What we've done is we've looked at what the majority of our clubs feel is the best option. And we can move forward there. What it has done, it rewards the clubs that have done well, you know, this season. And it doesn't feel like they've wasted 7 months because they have still got the opportunity to progress up the leagues in that respect. So we believe it will help the game, because what it does do now is it ensures that come 2021, when we start, teams are playing at the level they should be at, which is quite important, I feel.
And I've done my research and looked at all the points per games compared to the real timetables when the season stopped. And to be fair, especially sort of down the bottom of the table, which is probably where you'd like it to be, that fairer comparison, it hasn't really changed too many things, which is good to see. So teams who perhaps didn't deserve to go down haven't gone down. And that is nice to see. However, there is probably the main outlier, you'd say, in the experiment, if you like, is Senior B, with Bassingbourne moving up from fifth to top spot, moving up four places, Eton Soakham moving up fourth to second, and Faxted, of course, dropping out of that top two, moved down to third. Of course, there's always going to be outliers like that, Chris, but what would you say to the likes of Faxted, who they'd say they've worked hard all season and now have just sort of missed out on that top two?
Yeah, I think what I would say is, at the moment, I'm not promising anything, I don't think you can guarantee it'll just be the top two up, because as you can see, we have got, at the moment, effectively two vacancies in Senior A, because we should be at 16. In the Kershaw Prem, and then vacancies down. So I'm not sure. What I would say is, it's a difficult situation, because Bassingbourne and Eton Soakham both had fantastic cup runs in the County Cups and League Cups. So they would obviously have games to play catch up on. So to penalise them for have very successful seasons is harsh. So I can understand there's going to be winners and losers in this, without a shadow of a doubt. We just feel that I don't think a season lies over a season. I think, you know, if you look at it, and we did a little bit of looking into it, that teams last March where they were to where they finished, the points per game average doesn't actually change that much towards the end of the season. So we believe that it is the fairest option, even though it's not a perfect option.
Mm. And like you say, the positive from it, it keeps things moving, it keeps things ticking over. So hopefully then when you get start the new season, whenever that may be, it's as seamless as possible. And it's almost like as if football hasn't really been away, although I'm sure time-wise it will probably feel like it has. And with regards to the state of play across Cambridgeshire, financially, we hear lots, you know, in the media about the virus and the lockdown will really affect the recreational game and the finances. What does that actually mean, Chris? What are the main financial implications that clubs could suffer from being out of action for such a long time?
I think it's a catch 22. I think you've got to look at the different levels. Obviously, we've got in Cambridgeshire, we've got the senior clubs who have their own grounds, who will obviously have costs going out, you know, and we're looking to support them through the Sport England funding as much as we can to ensure that obviously they can survive and keep going. At grassroots level, I'm not sure, if I'm honest with you, what the implications of costs will be. I think our bigger concern will be, hopefully it won't be a concern, is people playing the game once this is over. You know, we don't know what the economy is going to look like. We don't know what people are going to be in job situations like. So I think the biggest concern for us at the moment is ensuring that we've got people playing, as many people as possible who want to play the game, playing the game and have the opportunity to do so.
Cambridge 105 Radio. On Cambridge 105 Radio.
So you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Thanks very much for tuning in. Let's move on now to our community story this week, and it's an absolute cracker for you. Jamie Campbell, who is now involved with Whittlesford Football Club, he set up the hashtag Run5K for the NHS campaign to try and get people active and try and get people raising money for the Addenbrookes Charity Trust. He spoke to me earlier on in the week about how the idea came about, and there's some cracking stories in here as well about some of the reasons why people have been completing the run.
We set up this campaign called hashtag Run5K for the NHS. We want people to go out, run 5K, donate £10 or as much as they can, and take a selfie. Send us your GPS time and we'll put it onto our Twitter and Instagram page, with all proceeds going to the Addenbrookes Charitable Trust, you know, our local hospital. We think that we should be helping anyone who's on the front line right now, and it's nice to help out our local hospital.
Yeah, it certainly is. And we'll come on to the details of how much has been raised so far. A terrific amount of money. How did the idea come about? Because obviously it's quite a simple idea, but it seems really effective.
Yeah, there was a lot of pages on Twitter and Facebook. You can see a lot of people donating. There was a similar one down south. Got in contact with them. They were very happy for us to sort of do one for our local hospital. So the idea sort of came from there. I put it across to a few of the lads in the Whittlesford WhatsApp group to try and get them involved on the Friday to give us a bit of a base and hoping people will take part. You know, I know a lot of people in the local football community, and thankfully they saw that the guys from my WhatsApp group were taking part, and then they all got involved and it started from there.
And I guess that shows the power not only of community and the people you know in the villages and the surrounding villages, but also the power of local sport, in that you said you knew a lot of people in the game of football, and that really helped to accelerate the amount of people that were taking part and the raising of money.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how much it's just blown up from the first 11 people from my WhatsApp group to numerous people from in Cambridge and beyond taking part. And then people started nominating. Originally, we didn't even come up with the nominating idea. And then people just started nominating people, and it just got more and more, to the point that we had that many posts to Instagram, wouldn't let us post so many per day. So we had to cut down how many we were posting. There was a lot of catching up, a lot of admin, but every time someone ran, it was all worth it.
Brilliant. And how much money have you actually raised so far then?
Yeah, we've raised over £5,000. Amazing amount of money. Originally, we set out with a target of £3,000. I think after 4 or 5 days, we beat that. Every day, people are donating more and more. And it's just amazing, incredible amount of money.
Brilliant. Have you set any more targets for how much you want to get to now? Because it seems like it's rapidly rising.
If I could dream and I could wish, ideally, I'd love to get to £10,000. But every £10 is just as important as the next.
Mm, certainly isn't. And how many people have actually taken part in it? Do you have numbers for that, Jamie?
I think total we had about 428 donations. I don't know the total people taking part. I haven't counted. Every day I know I get in from work and I'm catching up on 10, 15 posts per day. So we've had quite a few. We started on, I think it was the 11th, Saturday the 11th. I got the Wiltsford lads to run it on the Friday night to get their time, to give us a little bit of base, to see the people that have taken part, hoping that people would get involved, and thankfully they have.
Amazing. So 12 days into the campaign and already raised over £5,000, like a terrific amount of money, and hopefully that continues to increase over the next few days. Have you got any amazing stories? Usually with these sort of campaigns that raise a lot of money, you get some stories from people who can either relate to the cause, where the money's going to, and some of those are really inspiring. Have you got any of those for us?
Yeah, the one that touches base the most is what we're trying to do is yesterday we received a message from Wayne Goddard and his family. Unfortunately, his mum, Jerry Goddard, passed away on Friday due to COVID-19. So him and his family got involved with us, got in touch with us. They were actually ran the 5K in memory of his mum. That family is amazing to find the strength to go and run 5K. Mm. And they also donated over £100 to our cause. And they also messaged us saying that the NHS were amazing regarding their mum. They were at the phone every time they wanted. That family is amazing. I can't thank them enough for what they've done.
Wow. I mean, amazing people, amazing strength of character from Wayne and his family to go out and run just after their mother had sadly passed. And of course, condolences to him and his family. It's horrible, horrible news. And it really puts into reality why we're all doing this, why you've set up this brilliant campaign, Jamie. Have you got any other stories for us? Perhaps maybe some funny ones or some ones that caught your eye over the last few days of people doing this?
Yeah, from the start, there was a few that from then, that's when we believe that it kind of blew up a little bit. There's a guy called Jack Watson. He ran 3 miles and then he messaged us saying, I didn't realise that 3.1 miles was 5K, so I'll go again tomorrow. And he went again tomorrow and donated twice. And I think for me personally, people seeing that kind of effort and commitment from there, a lot of people got involved from that. A lot of people see it and took a bit from that. I know I certainly did. It gives you a bit of inspiration to push further and get people involved in it, and that was great for me. Also, a massive thank you to Lee Pacey for getting involved. You know, he's the reason we're kind of on the radar. He got us in contact with you. Him and his son also run, and his son Mason, who's 9, also donated £10 of his own pocket money to our cause. That is just such a nice touch, and I want to massive thank you to Mason for getting involved. It's also the story of a young lad called Taylor Ward. He's 8 years old. His mum got a bit confused regarding the 5K distance. She thought 5K was 5 miles. So 8 years old, he ran 5 miles. He did it in 46 minutes. I mean, that is just amazing from him. I mean, keep up that training routine, he's going to be the next Mo Farah.
Because the 5 miles, if my maths is correct, is about eight kilometres.
Yeah. I think she thought 5K, 5 miles. It's 3.1.
Brilliant. And did he try and correct himself and do it again the next day?
No, we haven't had any information regarding that. All we know is that ran the original. I'm guessing his legs are a bit tired.
Yeah, well, good lad. A bit extra doesn't hurt anyway. But that's just it. It's such a simple way of raising money. We always say if everyone in the UK gave £1, you get about 60 million quid. And it's almost the same with this. If everyone just got up, went for a run, just donated a tenner, think how much money you'd raise and all going to such a brilliant cause.
Yeah, I mean, the idea originally of people going out running 5K, I mean, since then, we've had people walk it. We've had people walk with their pets. We've had people lift weights. If you're unable to run 5K and you want to get involved and you want to walk it, cycle it, swim it, whatever you want to do to get involved, we're more than happy. As long as you donate and you complete a distance and you get out and you get a bit of activity, get involved, and we'll retweet you and we'll post you on the Instagram page. We've had a guy called Pip Davis who yesterday commented on our post saying that since his donation, he's seen that much positivity on our page. It's actually pushed him to run every other day since. And even on Saturday, he managed to run 9K. And for us, obviously, originally set up as a charity page, to see people taking a bit of inspiration from what we're doing, a bit of positivity and getting out there and doing the exercise during these times is amazing.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think if people can see, or if we're on social media or either listening to this interview, that other people are really trying to fight through the struggles within the lockdown, because it is tough for, you know, a number of people who may be on their own or quite lonely, and if they're fighting for it and they're combating that by running 5K, then hopefully that will inspire them to do the same and pull through. With regards to the leaderboards, you've been making it a bit competitive also, which is always healthy, especially during these times. Give us a flavour of what the leaderboards look like.
Okay, so the leaderboard at the moment is out front by a long distance is sort of superhuman Chris Kelly, who I think he's running 16 minutes 25 seconds. The guy is just a running machine. I think one of his runs, he ran from Newmarket to Felixstowe, took him like 8.5 hours, and he averaged 8 minute miles. I think he did 64 miles in total. That was just one of his runs. The guy is just a machine, and he's out front.
Can he be caught?
People are saying it. We get a lot of messages saying, I will beat that time. A lot of the Cherrington lads are hoping to get up there. It's been close. We had a guy from New York get involved, Chris Osborne, who's in second place. I think he did about 17 minutes 30. I hope they'll catch him, but it'd be a good person to do that.
Certainly would. And what's the women's leaderboard looking like?
Oh, we've had some amazing efforts, some really, really quick times. I think there were some of the top three names off my head. Vicky Ems from Wychford Football Club. She did it in 22 minutes, 12 seconds, I think, something like that, which is amazing speed. I don't think myself would get near that.
Brilliant. I'm going to ask you for some advice now, Jamie, because I'm due to be doing my 5K in a couple of days or so. Or else I'm giving myself a couple of days to actually, well, get slightly fitter if I can in 2 days, or at least go on a practice run first and then go for the real thing. But what tips would you give me?
My tips to you are, have a little read of the page. Go through some of the people that have run. Take a bit of inspiration for what they've done, what they've achieved. It doesn't matter what time you do it in. Just keep motivated to get it done. Keep thinking a little bit further and I'll be finished. Stay in the right mindset and you'll sail through it.
I will take the inspiration. I guess that is the perfect energy to go out on a run. I'm very competitive though, Jamie. So what is a good time?
A good time for me, I think for the men, I think below 22 minutes is a good time. I think below, at the moment, the leaderboard originally was from 16 minutes with Chris out front up to about 21 minutes. But lately, we've had a lot of 18-minute runs. A lot of, you know, 18, 18.30, 18.40. I think eventually the leaderboard is going to be below 19 minutes.
Okay. So I'll aim for about 22. And with regards to whether I do it on a road or over the field, what's the best way?
For me personally, I do like road running. Sometimes it's nice to go out to the fields, but for me, I like the road running for me.
Okie dokie. So tip one, read the inspirational messages. Tip two, aim for about 22 minutes. And three, on the road. Lastly then, what am I doing eating-wise? Are we having an energy bar beforehand, Lucozade, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I sit some and say, have a decent meal the night before, wake up, have a nice bit of breakfast, maybe a banana, something light, plenty of fluids, and just get out there and get it done.
Okay, that's a good point as well. What time of day? Because obviously with the hot weather as well now, you probably don't want to be going at 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the peak of the day with the heat-wise.
No, so a lot of people have run early in the morning. A lot of people the other week ran during the heat of sunshine. Still putting some great times. Personally, for me, I'd go out early in the morning. Some of the faces and the photos we've received, people are struggling in the heat, but they all get it done.
Okay, okay. Well, I will send you my picture in due course, and hopefully, for my own sake, I'm around 22 minutes. Maybe if we're doing the show next week and you don't hear how I get on, that's probably because I haven't hit 22 minutes. Jamie, it's been a pleasure talking to you. If people want to get involved, how do they? What's the process?
Yeah, so you can do your run. My WhatsApp number is pretty much posted over most of the posts. Get involved, get on the Twitter page. It's at run5k for the NHS. And the numbers are, it's 5 and 4 for run5k for the NHS.
Yeah.
Just go on Twitter, search it, you'll find us. Do your run. Tweet us, Instagram us, direct message us, send it through to my WhatsApp number. We will share your post. We thank you for your effort. We thank every single person that's taken part. That's something I take pride in. Make sure everything's involved. And I've had some really nice conversations with people that have taken part. And I look forward to receiving plenty more.
Brilliant, Jamie. And even if you do the run or you don't do the run, just having a flick through some of the messages on the campaign website is perfect inspiration, isn't it?
Yeah, just some of the messages you've received. Personally, every single person that's run has thanked me for what I've done, but I can't thank these people enough for what they've done. The money we've raised in such a short space of time, the money we're planning to raise, it goes direct to the NHS, direct to Adam Charitable Trust, amazing charity. It's our local hospital, and they need our help. And I think it's about time that, you know, we all got involved, did our bit, and there's a real togetherness with what we're doing. Everyone that's run, everyone likes each other's posts, everyone retweets each other's posts, and togetherness is key during these times.
Well, Jamie, thank you very much for setting up an amazing campaign, and the cause is, of course, absolutely fantastic and pivotal that we get behind it. Jamie, thanks very much for coming on, and I'll be in touch for my time.
Okay, lovely. I look forward to receiving it. 22 minutes below.
I'll try. Cheers, Jamie.
Thank you, mate. Cheers. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yep, you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Lastly then, today, let's hear from GB star Tessa Howard. Now, Tessa used to play her hockey in the local area for Cambridge City before moving up north to bigger and better things. Of course, she was due to take part in the Olympics in Tokyo this summer, but that has been suspended. So here she is talking to Niall Jackson about how she got involved in the sport and hoping to go for gold next year in the Olympics.
I joined Cambridge City Hockey Club just by chance because my mum said, why not just go along on a Sunday? And I was upset because it was at the same time as rugby. So I had to make that choice. And then when I started playing, I really enjoyed it. And then I guess the rest just kind of started happening.
Yeah. So Cambridge City, who was your main, who made you, I suppose, fall in love with hockey?
Yeah. So my first coach was Mike Mitchum. He still runs Cambridge City Juniors. And at the same time, I was playing it for St. Faith's and I had John Welsh there. And I remember him pulling me aside at one of our tournaments and saying, "Tess, you're a machine and I need you to work on full cylinders right now." And I think that kind of stuck with me as what I loved about the sport, the team aspect and individual aspect as well. So it's got everything. I mean, that's why I love it so much. I think I was terrified of joining the first when they finally invited me along to training, and then I realized that there was so much more than just kind of you rocking up each day and playing hockey. Like there was a whole world of international players, and that's where I came across the fact that it was on TV sometimes. And so I used to watch that. I became obsessed with the DB team. Embarrassingly, my dad got me it wasn't a real one, but it was a signed poster of some of my now teammates on there.
Oh, wow. So that must be something that you get grilled about in the changing room.
Yeah, they do. But to be honest, I was fangirling them until like 2 years ago. So, well, still do in some respects. But players, I'd say like Alex Danson and Sophie Bray, early on, I was impressed with the way that they to the field, like they weren't afraid to score to floor, get on the floor to score, and those sort of really throwing themselves. Like Alex Danson is notorious for her backhand, and I loved the character that they had on the pitch, and that really inspired me.
Would you say to play for your country like you do now, was that the goal right the way through, or was it kind of something that just popped up because you turned out to be quite good at it and just put everything into it that you could? Because obviously from the rugby side of things, you'd always put 110% in from what I can remember.
Yeah, I think it's funny because when I started playing hockey and I realised that there was a pathway to England under 16, that's what I first understood, that you went from county to regional to England. And that was my only aim, was to get to the under 16 England team. I thought that would be brilliant. And I'm not really sure why. For some reason, it's something that I really wanted to do. Then, because everything happened so quickly from when I went under 16 onwards, the next 2 years, I was just loving the game so much. And for some reason, putting in all the effort, all the fitness extras, I don't know why I was so driven, but it wasn't to get to the GB team. It was just see how good I could become.
Yeah.
And that's still sort of my aim. But then I went to the World Cup, the Women's Hockey World Cup. It was held in London in 2018 in the summer. And I was involved in the under 23 setup at the time. And I went to that tournament and sat side, went to as many games as I could. And then for some reason, just something had changed inside of me. And there was 18 months until Tokyo, and I just felt like, why not? I'm just going to go for this now. Something just changed inside of me. I just, I,
And you just wanted to play for GB, and you were yeah. very much kind of like, this is my aim now, straightforward, nothing's going to stop me yeah. getting there.
See, so Alex Stanton was on the side of the huge stadium stand, and I thought, wow, hockey has like got here, the stage where we have like 10,000 in the crowd. And I looked at the players on the pitch and I was so impressed with the way that they were performing. Like some of the players in the international side, like from Argentina and Holland, I still am like idolizing them. And I thought I would love to see how good I could become, sort of thing.
Have you, so in games with GB, have you come up against players where you've looked up to them like for so many years and then you've suddenly had the ball and you've got the ball past them, you think, oh wow, I'm pretty good at this then?
Yeah, definitely tackling your heroes is quite fun, or getting past them. But so my first tournament was in November 2018. It was the Champions Trophy, and that's the top six teams in the world. So it was quite a straight up. It wasn't like a friendly against
You're not going to play a friendly today, Tess. You're going to go and play against the best teams in the world. And you're just there like, right, okay, cool.
And they put me in a screen, which is a like midfielder position. So you're up against all of the pressure from the opposition. I have to try and get the ball out a lot and try set up attacks. And I was like, okay, wow. So I've just jumped straight into the deep end. And I remember playing against, specifically against this player called Ava de Goed, who is just been voted Hockey Federation's Player of the Year.
So the best player in the world at hockey.
Basically the best player in the world. And my mum captured this brilliant photo of us back because we were both the midfielders. And I look back at it now and I'm like, that was truly a moment where I felt like I had made it. But then I realised I hadn't made it until until like I could actually perform and give my best on the pitch. Yes. Because it's quite difficult when you're playing against it's people you think are so much better than you do play well. So that's something I've had to learn.
So you play now for East Grinstead. How's that compared to Cambridge City then? Is it higher level and stuff like that?
Yeah, so East Grinstead are part of the Premier League. So that's the top. And we came second this year in the Premier League. So it's nice because we're not... I wouldn't say we're like a star-studded team or we're a family club with a lot of the main part of why we play is just to have fun. And so that's what we do every day or like every weekend. And it shows in the quality of our hockey. It's similar to Cambridge in that respect in terms of family friendly, kind of the social side of it, but also you want to do as well as you can. We want to win the league. We wanted to win it this year, but it didn't quite happen. So next year we want to win that. But I played for Durham for 2 years when I was back up there, but just because of the travel, when I first joined the program in late 2018, I was still commuting to Durham play on the weekend, and it was just so unsustainable.
I bet that was really difficult actually, being at university and also splitting your time trying to play international hockey as well, or play hockey to the best of your ability. But now all this coronavirus is stuck in and you guys are going to be pushed back for a year, which I suppose must be really annoying actually, because I bet you guys were well on course to kind of give it your best shot.
Yeah, it's definitely thrown a spanner in the works. To be honest, we've been on a journey for the last year and a half. We've had some pretty tough times as a team in terms of some hard results to take. We got a new coach last January, and so kind of settling in to the rhythm of how he wants us to play, which is the best style of hockey. It's full-blown Australian style attack. And at the beginning of our time, I think we all took the freedom to attack a little bit too literally, and we kind of forgot about the defense part.
Even the defenders so would forget about the defence part.
Yeah. it enabled us like a lot of freedom to learn. And we ended the year with our two victories against Chile take us to the Olympics. And it felt like we had turned a leaf and we were on a really good trajectory. So I think actually, yeah, the added time can only make us better. So in that respect, it could be a blessing in disguise.
So what have you all been doing? Kind of, I've seen your videos, kind of home videos, training and stuff. Are you the only one of the team doing that at the moment, or is everybody in their back garden practicing, keeping the conditioning going? You got your own conditioning programs and stuff to keep up with?
So it's been an interesting change because we were planning to peak at our physical fitness in about 3 months' time for the Olympics. So we've done serious conditioning programs for the last few months. So our bodies are very tired, I'd probably say that. So our S&C guy said, we can't maintain this for another 14 months. So this period of time, you can take the remain fit and healthy, but it's not destroying you. I have kind of taken the other approach, which is sort of like, I want to keep going on training. That's why I've gone out and done different exercises with my little brother outside. I think a lot of the girls are doing the same because it keeps you sane. It's nice, the freedom to plan your own session.
So looking ahead to next year, you don't want to put maybe a label on it, or maybe you do. Is it gold? Is that the aim?
Funny, when you ask me what the aim is for next year.
Playing some hockey, maybe, after all of this.
Yeah, that's the first thing. I think the team has the potential to win gold. I genuinely do. If we all like put in the work and we all become the best hockey players we can, like at this time. So like, I've had to realize that this is a journey for myself and for my teammates, and we're all gonna peak at different times. But if we can all, we'll find our groove, and if we find our groove, then we can, I truly believe we can beat anyone. So and anything can happen on any day. Rio proved that. So yeah, let's put a label on it. We want to go for gold in 2021.
Cambridge 105 Radio.